Come on in. Anybody, you're going to be able to hear an independent, non-aligned candidate for the House of Representatives running from the 3rd District. And I'm going, if you're passing by and you can hear this, I'm going to describe exactly where the 3rd District is. It is, the 3rd District is basically south of I-80 to the Missouri border and west from I-35 to the Nebraska border. Excuse me. It's comprised of 16 counties. Those 16 counties, if you're a resident of one of those counties, really pay attention. But the counties are Adair, Adams, Cass, Dallas, Fremont, Guthrie, Mills, Monroe, Montgomery, Polk, Page, Pottawatomie, Ringgold, Taylor, Union, and Warren. I hope that I haven't left anybody out, any counties. But if you're from one of those counties, I hope to be representing you, and I will be on the ballot in your county November 8th. So I'm here today to give, this is my first stump speech, and I'm here today, and I'm going to be running against a couple of major party candidates. They are both young. One, by virtue of his name, David Young. And David Young is the current, he is the incumbent, and he's running to retain the seat. Well, Mr. Young just spoke a little while ago. But the last time that I saw him on television, David Young was crying his eyes out. So I call him the crybaby. And the reason is he was crying because he had abandoned his convictions on a bill. He had voted yes with his convictions on the first reading. And on a subsequent reading, he changed his vote and voted no. So he was crying and saying, I love people, I love people. Well, this is what I have to say about Mr. Young. He abandoned his convictions, he abandoned his vote, and he sold those people down the river. That's not right. I don't want that in a representative for me. Now, the other fellow that I'm running against, his name is Jim Maurer. And he's a young man by virtue of his age. He has a young family. I think he has school-age children. So he has been working in Washington, D.C. with the Department of Defense. And somehow or another, he moved to the 4th District for the last election. He moved to the 4th District, and he ran as a candidate there, running against Steve King. He lost that race. Now he has moved to the 3rd District, and he's running as a candidate for Congress here. So you have to establish residency requirements in all of these people, in these places. He has a young family, and I've been working as a substitute teacher for a while, and I know what it does to children to have to move, pick up, enter a new school system, make new friends. Even if you're homeschooled, you still have to make friends as children. And, you know, there's an adage that, I've got a bunch of adages today. There's an old adage that goes, you can make new friends, but you can't make old friends. So I'm hoping, I have friends that I made when I was in grade school. I'm still in contact with. I still love them. And we went to grade school together. We went to junior high school together. We went to high school and off to college. And we retain a relationship still today. Now, if his children are homeschooled, that's one thing. But they still need friends in a community. So I wish that Mr. Maurer would become a part of the solution, rather than a part of the problem that we have here in Iowa of young people moving away. You know, there's something to be said about getting old. Besides gray hair and achy joints, you gain some knowledge. You temper down your ideas. You become more compassionate, perhaps. But hopefully you gain some wisdom along the way. And my grandfather, he was hilarious, Claude Hope. And we would go and have breakfast, and he would pour his coffee into a saucer. And pour his coffee into the saucer, and he'd go, "Look out the window. Look, there's a bluebird out the window." Then he'd slurp the coffee out of his saucer. My grandmother would come at him, and then he would go, "You know, the devil isn't wise because he's the devil. The devil is wise because he's old." And grandmother would just come at him to shake his throat. Say, "Don't you talk about these children. Don't you talk about the devil to these children." But so I have a problem with Mr. Maurer. I wish he'd settle down. He has an opportunity through the private sector as well as the public sector to have a wonderful job, to go to the front of the line in terms of hiring practices. I wish he'd take us up on that instead of pursuing a seat. And, you know, when you move from one district to another in search of a place at the table, I know what that's called, and you know what it's called, and it's a disparaging term, and it's called carpetbagging. And I hate to say it about him, but that's exactly what it is. He's a carpetbagger, and he needs to stop it and settle down here in Iowa. So that said, those are the two candidates that the major party candidates. Now, what will I do as the 3rd District representative? I'm hoping, and I will, work closely with the governments, the community governments, the citizens of the counties and towns and townships all over this district. I'll work closely with the government of Des Moines, Council Bluffs, and the citizens of Creston, with the citizens of Malvern, which is just a shining gem of a small town down in southern Iowa, with the citizens of Tabor and Glenwood, where we started the RAGBRAI this year. They started the RAGBRAI this year. And Winterset. It's a wonderful place with covered bridges and Pamel Park. And that's where my family, my parents were raised. And that's where I spent a lot of time as a child, and for holidays and summers. So I will work with these people. Any place where there are citizens who want to be active and retain their type of life in these communities, I intend to engender what I call a rural renewal in Southwest Iowa. And to that point, I will put the pedal to the metal. Now, I wonder, the Register has given us 20 minutes, and so I think we may be about 10 through it. And there's a young man, a friend of mine here, Jack, and I have given him an assignment. And he has kindly volunteered. And I have a hat, and in the hat are pennies and my contact information. So Jack's going to go around, and I want you can go ahead and take a penny out of the hat and card with my contact information. And the adage that I'm using this time is, of course, a penny for your thoughts. And please go ahead and contact me through my website, and then there's a phone number that has you can text. That phone number, I would prefer it not be used in the middle of the night, but you can text anytime. So does anybody have any questions? Because I do have a couple more comments that I would like to make. So I'm not seeing any questions really quick. So what I thought I would do is show you my approach to a problem that is occurring in the Congress right now, when they left on recess, they left without appropriating money for the Zika virus. So there were two, as I understand it, there were two amounts that they were sort of haggling over. They couldn't settle this issue and do an appropriations before they left. Well, the Zika virus, this would be my approach. I would look at the, I would call on the CDC and the Center for Disease Control, the NIH, National Institute of Health, to contact the companies, biomedical or the institutions in this country that do produce virus vaccines. And this is a particular virus that's not particularly, difficult. We did all of the groundwork for virology back in the days of AIDS. So we know viruses in and out, inside and out. And this is not a difficult virus from which to produce the vaccine. It also produces a fairly innocuous disease in those affected, with one exception. And that exception is in pregnant women. And in pregnant women, it can produce a birth defect called microcephaly, which means small head. And that is a devastating, devastating birth defect. It's devastating in two ways. Emotionally, it's devastating, and financially, it's devastating. So it's very important to get this work done and fast. So I would charge an institution with developing the vaccine. They can do it. They do it every day. They do it fast. And a development of the vaccine and the human trials. That would be one fixed cost, not difficult to determine. And then the producer of the vaccine, we would have to determine how many doses we need. And that's a set number, almost set number, and readily available to us through the census. So we need to know the numbers of women who are able to bear children in the U.S. and the territories. And I suppose that would be a population between the ages of 11 and maybe 50. So our first population target would be a little bit of a larger group. And then I would add in vaccine doses for maybe the next 10 years worth of people, young women, who would be coming into the population. And so that would be my approach. It's very pragmatic. You don't even have to subtract or divide. Complex math. All you have to do is do some addition and maybe a little bit of multiplication to see how much is this going to cost us. It maybe would take you a couple of hours a day and to determine what you need for appropriations, and I don't understand why they couldn't get it done. But that would be my pragmatic approach, and I think I could convince others, you know, this is what it's going to take. Compare the number to the numbers in the two appropriation bills and vote accordingly. So that's one approach, and I would have to say to these guys who left that undone, that there's another old saying, and it's a pox on your house. And it's apropos, because what it means was, I'm cursing your house and saying, you guys should be afflicted with smallpox. And if there are women who, if there would have been women who would, and children who would suffered from this particular deformity born, while these guys drug their feet, then I do have to say a pox on their house. Now, there was news this morning that the vaccine has been produced, and so, you know, they're not doing their job, but someone's doing the job for them somewhere. So hopefully the people are being vaccinated. And I know as Iowans we think, well, this is not our problem, but the way we move, it probably is our problem. Somebody here is afflicted already, more than likely. And we've got our winter coming up and everybody goes south to Florida. So that's how I would have handled that problem had I been in Congress when they left on recess. Another thing that I would like to say is Congress is frequently criticized for rolling the ball downhill. We're always criticized because we incur a debt and we leave it to future generations to pay that debt. And most of the time, people do not think that this is right, and Congress gets criticized. Well, that's only money. And I'm going to tell you that from my point of view, that's not the important thing that we will leave as a legacy. So as a legacy, we do not want to leave dirty air, dirty water, or dirty soil. And that would be a horrible legacy to leave to our children. And, you know, it was less than a generation ago we saw rivers on fire. Jack and these guys, I don't know how old you are, but if you're under 25 or under 40, you may not remember that. But there were rivers on fire because of pollution. We saw climate inversions and weather inversions that caused people to be warned to stay inside time after time, even in Des Moines. Stay inside if you have a bit of heart disease or asthma or some type of lung problem. Stay inside because you may succumb because the air is so polluted from car exhaust. We also saw, about less than a generation ago, we were producing electricity in plants that were nuclear powered. And so we had to figure out where to put these spent rods. And what we started doing, we tried to bury the spent rods under a mountain at one point in Arizona. Another thing that we tried to do with the spent rods was put them in a metal container and drop them into the ocean. Crazy, because it's corrosive. I think what we finally did with the spent rods was we paid other countries to take those rods and whatever. We washed our hands of the problem. We paid another country to take them. And whose backyard we buried them in, I don't know. But that would be a legacy today if we didn't have the EPA. And the EPA is criticized time and time again for overdoing their job and not being a great agency. But look where we'd be without them. You know, rivers would still be on fire. Rods would be buried in our backyard. And the cars would still be choking out our lungs. So we have our problems. We have environmental problems still today. And I don't want to leave that for a legacy for children. And what I would like to say is that I hope that we're not close to the brink. So close that we can't turn back. Because, in terms of the water and the air and the soil, because, number one, if you think about it, you've got 1 minute to exist without air. You've got 2 days to exist without water. And you've got 2 weeks to exist without food. So think about it. And if you're from the 3rd District on November 8th, go in. You can mark a straight ticket, but go on down the line, and you're going to see my name, Claudia Addy. Fill in that circle. Don't go outside the lines. Vote Claudia Addy for Congress from the 3rd District. Thank you, everybody.